glanced at me as he turned the page. "I am surprised you never told me about this admirer of yours, this Mr. Whittles." I laughed a little in embarrassment. He was not somebody I wanted to remember. Philip looked up from the book expectantly, sure I was about to entertain him. He was twice my age, wore a creaky corset, and had a very wet mouth. He laughed. "It sounds like a lethal combination." He was perfectly repulsive. I never understood why my aunt seemed to like him.
"Did she?"
Philip raised an eyebrow. I nodded. "Yes, but he was very obtuse. He seemed a hopeless case." Philip shut the book.
"It sounds like you have some matchmaking to do."
I shrugged. "I would like nothing more, but I have never known how to go about it." Philip considered me for a moment.
"I have it. Write them each a love letter, as if from the other, and see if it sparks something."
A love letter? I could not even begin to fathom how to write a love letter.
"You do know how to write a love letter, don't you?"
Philip asked with a smile.
"Of course not," I scoffed. "Why, of course not? Don't you think you might write one some day?"
I shrugged, pretending to feel nonchalant about the topic, but inside I was squirming with awkwardness. "I've never considered it."
"Then I will teach you. But now I'm curious," he smiled teasingly. "Have you ever received a love letter?"
I blushed. "No, I have not. Not unless you count Mr. Whittle's poems."
"I definitely would not count those."
His gaze turned provocative. His lips curved into a smile.
17 and never had a love letter? That doesn't seem right. Shall I write you one, Marianne?"
I scowled at him. He took such delight in embarrassing me.
"No, thank you," I said forcefully. "Why not?"
His voice was quieter now. He had turned sideways on the settee so that he was angled toward me. I reminded myself of several things in quick succession. Philip was a flirt. Philip loved to make me blush. Philip stole hearts he had no intention of keeping. He was teasing me, as he always did. There was nothing more to it than that.
"You know I will leave if you tease me too much," I warned him.
He turned the book over in his hands, looking at it instead of me.
"Why do you think I would tease you?"
I rolled my eyes.
"Experience?"
He lightly tossed the book onto the tea table and leaned toward me, his arm along the back of the settee.
"But Marianne, I am always serious when it comes to matters of the heart."
He was still smiling, but his eyes were serious. It was one of those instances, always unexpected, when I had the feeling Philip's teasing was a facade, a thin cover for deeper feelings I could only guess at. I studied his expression without success. In so many ways, this man was still a mystery to me. I might never write a letter to Mr. Whittles as if from my aunt, but I was intrigued. I wanted to know this side of Philip, this side of him that knew how to court ladies and how to write a love letter and how to read a poem so that it melted something deep inside me. I wanted to know the side of him that Cecily knew. It was dangerous and most likely foolish, but I had only a few short hours before everything would change, and I knew I would never have this opportunity again. "Very well," I said, feeling nervousness tremble within me. "You may teach me. After all, it may be a skill worth learning." Philip smiled, then stood and walked to the writing desk in the corner. He picked up a quill and ink and paper, then carried everything to the round table where we had played whist with Mr. and Mrs. Clumpett last night.
"You won't learn anything sitting over there," he said. "Come here."
I joined him at the table, and he held out a seat for me. Then he moved another chair so that it was right next to mine and sat down. I looked at the closed door of the drawing room. Philip was always careful to keep doors open when we were alone.
but he made no move to do so now. My heart picked up speed, and nervousness began to stream through me. He sat so close to me that I could smell a mixture of scents, soap and clean linen, and something that smelled earthy, like the grass after rain. I thought he smelled like sunlight and blue skies.
"Are you ready for your lesson in romance?" Philip asked, with a teasing gleam in his eye.
Chapter 16. I was not sure I was ready at all, with Philip sitting so close to me in this quiet room. But then I remembered I was supposed to be growing up, and I tried to imagine what an experienced lady in London would do. I tried to imagine what Cecily would do. I imagined I was graceful and elegant and accustomed to handsome gentlemen teaching me how to write a love letter. I kept my voice casual and said, "Please, go ahead." He cleared his voice and spoke in a tutorial manner. "The purpose of the love letter is to convey feelings one cannot say out loud. Here is your first exam. Why would a gentleman be unable to declare himself openly?" Philip sounded so serious, as if he were a real teacher and I a pupil. I didn't want him to be serious, so I bit my lip, as if thinking hard, and said, because he's a mute?" Philip's lips twitched in an effort not to smile.
"I see you passed the general and went straight to the specific. The answer, Miss Daventry, is that a gentleman is unable to declare himself openly if his circumstances prevent it."
He raised an eyebrow.
"Were you paying attention?"
I nodded.
"Yes.
But you spoke of a gentleman. Should you not be teaching me how a lady writes a love letter? After all, I will need to write a love letter as if it were my aunt."
He rolled his eyes. "I am not going to pretend to write a love letter to another man. You will just have to take my instruction and apply it in your own way. Now, how do you think he should begin?"
"With her name," I guessed.
"Unimaginative."
He picked up the quill, dipped it in ink, and wrote,
"To my unsuspecting love."
I had to lean closer to Philip to read the words clearly.
"Much more imaginative," I murmured.
"And now for the essence of the letter."
I kept my eyes on the paper, waiting for him to write more, but his hand stayed poised above the paper until I looked up. He gazed into my eyes for a long minute, then said in a quiet voice,
"The eyes are a good place to start."
Oh no, now he was going to start teasing me in earnest. I was sure of it.
"When I look into your eyes, I lose all sense of time and place. Reason robbed, clear thought erased. I am lost in the paradise I find within your gaze."
Oh my. I could never have imagined such words, not from anyone, not from Philip. They burned me from within, and I think if he had read them out loud, I would have been consumed by heat. I was grateful that he was silent. I still felt his gaze on my face. He was so close, but I did not dare look at him again. Instead, I rested my chin on my hand, curling my fingers over my cheek in an attempt to hide my blush.
"I long to touch your blushing cheek, to whisper in your ear how I adore you, how I have lost my heart to you, how I cannot bear the thought of living without you."
The tease? I cursed him silently. I was sure he wrote about my blush just to provoke a reaction from me. He loved to provoke me, I reminded myself. He loved to make me blush. He said so himself that day in the library. But even telling myself that did nothing to lessen the heat of my embarrassment. I tried to remind myself that this was only a lesson and not a real love letter.
"Not my love letter," I repeated in my mind while I stared at the paper. "To be so near you without touching you is agony. Your blindness to my feelings is a daily torment, and I feel driven to the edge of madness by my love for you."
The only sound in the room was the quiet scratch of quill on paper as Philip wrote. I stared at the letter as if it was my only anchor to reality. My heart thudded so hard it ached. Without knowing much about love myself, I knew that Philip must have once loved someone this passionately. He had once felt exactly what he had written, that he was nearly out of his mind with love. I choked on a surge of jealousy so bitter it shocked me.
"Where is your compassion when I need it the most? Open your eyes, love, and see what is right before you, that I am not merely a friend, but a man deeply, desperately in love with you."
I was shaking. I gripped my hands into fists and searched for some composure. I should be able to treat this as an amusing lesson in romance, a chance for me to become a little more experienced. Then why did I feel stretched thin, so transparent and tremulous? Why did my heart gallop? Why did I feel I was coming undone? I knew none of the answers. I only knew that I was greatly disturbed by this lesson. I wanted to find something to laugh about, but the letter sat before me on the table like an intimate glimpse into Philip's heart, and there was nothing to laugh about. Indeed, I felt strangely close to crying. I wanted to push the paper away. I wanted to run from the room. I wanted to reverse the clock and never know that Philip was capable of this. I wanted to undo everything, even coming here to Edenbrook, rather than to know this about Philip. Finally, he spoke.
"Do you have any questions?"
His voice caused a ripple to cascade through me. I closed my eyes and summoned my courage to stay in my chair and not cry. This was my opportunity to prove my maturity. I would not let him know how his words had disturbed me. I cleared my throat. "How shall you sign it, your secret admirer?" My voice sounded close to normal, which I was quite proud of. After a pause, he said,
"No, that won't do."
His hand moved again, writing the words,
"Longing for you."
He signed his name underneath. I stared at his name, my fingers curled over my hot cheek, trying to hide something from him. Anything.
"What do you think?" he asked.
I tried to breathe normally and speak normally, but there was nothing normal about this moment. "Very nice," I said in a tight voice. Silence stretched so taut that I felt it almost like a tangible presence humming in the small space between us. I stared at the letter, intent on not looking up, because to look up would be disastrous. I counted slowly to 10 in my mind. Nothing. I counted to 10 again. Was he trying to burn a hole in my face with his gaze? Could this possibly be any more awkward? No. This was undoubtedly the most awkward moment of my life. I was sure of it. Then Philip took a breath, and I felt a switch turn in him. He said in a light voice,
"Of course, one must always take into consideration the modesty of the lady. Too subtle, and she may miss your meaning altogether. Too strong."
Philip set down the quill and reached up to the hand I was using to cover my blush. He hooked a finger around mine and pulled my hand down to the table.
"Too strong," he said, "and she may never look you in the face again."
I heard the wry amusement in his voice and looked up sharply. His eyes were brimming with amusement, and that was when I realized he was laughing at me. He must have known all along how embarrassed I was, and he simply wanted to see what reaction he could provoke in me. Hateful man! Whatever feeling had prompted me to almost cry a moment before now turned to anger of the hottest kind. I snatched my hand away from his and glared at him. I opened my mouth to tell him exactly what I thought of his atrocious teasing, when the door suddenly opened and Mrs. Clumpet walked in, looking over her shoulder and saying, "I think I left it in here last night." When she saw us, she stopped. "Oh, am I interrupting something?" she asked with a curious look. "Not at all," I said, but my voice came out hoarse. I hoped Philip would say something to dispel her suspicions, but of course he wouldn't do something I actually wanted him to do. Instead, he said, "I was just giving Marianne a lesson in romance." I gasped and shot him a look of consternation. He winked at me in his audacious way and flashed me his familiar grin. He was unbelievable. "Oh, well, my book can wait. I will simply come back later to look for it," she said with a smile, as she turned around and closed the door behind her. I stood as quickly as I could and stepped away from the table. "Philip, she is probably suspecting all sorts of things now that are not true." He stood and held out the letter to me.
"Is she?"
His eyes held both a question and a challenge, and I could not begin to think of how to respond. So I stood there, flustered beyond words. Then that man just walked out of the room, leaving me angry and embarrassed and confused with a love letter in my hand. Betsy took extra care with my hair that evening, brushing it until it shone like a ribbon of honey before pinning it up. She had been chattering non-stop about her trip into town. "I have been asking around about James, miss." "Who?" My thoughts were still caught on the love letter lesson. "Our missing coachman." "Oh, of course, James. And what have you found?" "There is talk of someone seeing him at an inn south of here. Said he looked well enough, with a pocket full of money. Seemed to be heading to Brighton, which is a very good idea, if I do say so myself. For sea air would be just the thing for a man recovering from a gunshot wound. I think he just decided he'd had enough of that nurse and left on his own."
I thought for a minute. "I suppose he may have decided he was well enough to leave on his own. But where would he have gotten the money? And why would he leave without saying anything? His care was paid for."
Betsy shrugged and adjusted one last strand of hair.
"There, what do you think?"
I looked in the mirror. Betsy had insisted I wear my new green silk gown. It was one of my more elegant gowns, and I wondered about the color. "Should I not wear the pink?" She shook her head decisively.
"No, this one brings out the green in your eyes, and your hair looks so pretty against it."
As much as I hated to agree with Mr. Whittles, at that moment my hair did look like amber. I had often complained about having such an indecisive eye color, with blue, green, and gray all fighting for dominance. But with the gown bringing out the green in my eyes, I was secretly pleased with the result. I may not be a classic beauty like Cecily, with her bright gold hair and blue eyes, but I thought I looked well enough tonight.
"You are right," I said. "The green is perfect."
She smiled.
"I know. You should trust me with such matters."
She stood back to look at me, pulled a curl out so it draped across my neck, and then nodded.
"You're ready."
"Thank you. I have no idea what I would do without you."
"Do you know how you can really thank me? Tell me exactly what Sir Philip says when he sees you."
She smiled mischievously. My heart dropped.
"Betsy, you shouldn't say such things."
"Why ever not?"
"Because someone might hear you and think that I desired Sir Philip's admiration."
I took a deep breath. "But I don't. I don't desire anything at all from him." She looked at me askance.
"You may not desire his admiration, but you certainly have it. We've talked about it down in the kitchen, the other servants and I."
Dismay filled me. This was terrible. If Betsy thought there was something between Philip and me, chances were good that the rest of the servants shared her opinion. They didn't understand that he was only a flirt and didn't mean anything by it. Somebody would certainly tell Cecily, and the damage it would cause was appalling to consider. I reached back and tried to undo the buttons on my gown.
What are you doing?
I've changed my mind. I'm wearing the pink. Betsy protested until she saw that I was serious, and then she reluctantly helped me change. She grew uncharacteristically quiet as she did. When she finished, I turned to thank her and found her giving me a look heavy with disapproval. I don't know what you think you've seen, I said, but I can assure you that you have imagined something that is not true. Sir Philip feels nothing toward me, and I feel nothing toward him. He is a flirt, and he has had no one else to flirt with here, and that was the only reason he was paying any attention to me. As soon as Cecily arrives, though, everything will be put to rights. You will see. As if my words had some sort of magical power, a knock sounded at the bedroom door. I opened it, and there stood Cecily, looking taller and prettier and more elegant than I had remembered. I almost didn't recognize her. But then I looked into her eyes, and I saw my childhood, and home, and happier days.
You're finally here, I cried, hurrying to embrace her.
She hugged me tightly but briefly before pulling away.
Yes, but I have only just arrived, so I must hurry to change for dinner. Come with me if you're ready, and we can spend a few minutes catching up.
I ignored Betsy's stare as I followed Cecily out of the room and down the hall to her own bedchamber. Her maid was already laying out an evening gown. It was a blue silk that matched Cecily's eyes. I sat on a chair while she dressed.
How was your journey? I asked. How was London? I have so much I want to ask you. I cannot tell you how good it is to see you.
I have so much to tell you as well, Cecily said, sitting in front of the dressing table. She watched her reflection in the mirror while her maid arranged her hair.
You would love London. It is so diverting. Just imagine, routs and balls and musicales and the theatre. There is something different every night of the week, and nobody goes to bed until long past midnight. There is so much to do and see, and everyone is so elegant. You must have a season. Next year, surely Grandmother will allow it.
I could not tell Cecily about the inheritance and the conditions attached to it with her maid here, so I only said, I hope so. She glanced sideways at me.
Did you have that gown made in Bath, my dear?
I smoothed my skirt.
I did.
Well, don't worry about it. Nobody cares what you are wearing here, I am sure.
And I will help you before you go to town, so that you will be perfectly up to snuff by the time you're presented.
She smiled broadly.
Never fear, Annie. I will save you from that horrid Bath and those dressmakers as well.
I hardly heard the rest of the speech, only the sound of my old pet name. Nobody called me Annie except my father and Cecily. Such a longing for home surged through me that I could not sit still. I jumped up and hugged Cecily.
I'm so glad you're here,
she laughed.
Yes, so am I, but you're ruining my hair.
I smiled sheepishly as I stood back from her. She inspected her image in the mirror one last time, then stood and turned to me.
What do you think? Am I going to catch myself a husband tonight?
She looked radiant. I have no doubt. The words were true, but I felt as if I were choking on them. In the drawing room, Lady Caroline introduced me to her daughter Louisa, her son William, and his wife Rachel. William smiled as if he knew an amusing secret about me. Rachel gave me an appraising look that was not unkind. Louisa was, at best, aloof toward me. Cecily had asked me to enter the room ahead of her so that I wouldn't be a distraction when she made her entrance. Now, as she walked into the room, everyone's eyes turned to her. She was beauty personified. Her hair was like gold silk, her skin like cream, her eyes like bluebells. She was as bright as the sun.
Sir Philip, she said, looking very elegant as she curtsied to him.
No doubt she had learned a lot about being elegant in London. I felt awkward and clumsy just watching her.
Miss Daventry,
he bowed in return. I am so happy to visit your beautiful home, and I am even happier to see you again. He said something polite in return. I had not looked at Philip at all since entering the room, but now that I was watching Cecily talk to him, I felt I could look at him without anyone noticing. He evidently noticed, however, because as soon as my eyes rested on his face, his gaze flicked to me. I had hidden his love letter in the drawer of my writing desk. I wished I could as easily hide it from my thoughts. His words resurfaced every other minute, tugging at me, coming to life in my mind. Cecily was saying something about how grand and beautiful everything was. I looked away, not hearing what Philip said in return. The butler opened the doors and announced that dinner was ready. I stood back to see how we would proceed to the dining room. Lady Caroline looked from Cecily to me and opened her mouth as if to speak, but before she said a word, Cecily had linked her arm through Philip's and smiled up at him. That question was answered then. She walked in on Philip's arm and was given the seat of honour to his right. She was the elder, after all. She had always insisted on being first. Those 7 minutes meant everything. I sat to Philip's left. From my position, I could easily see Cecily as she engaged Philip in conversation throughout four courses. She talked to no one else, and she obviously knew how to flirt. She was very good at smiling demurely and looking up at him through her lashes and touching his arm when she laughed. After two courses, I couldn't bear the sight of her hand on his arm, so I looked at my plate and ate my dinner while attempting to shut my ears to the sound of Cecily's laugh. I had never been bothered by the sound of it before, but tonight it grated on my nerves until a headache hummed around the base of my skull. When the footman brought in dessert, I couldn't help but feel Philip's gaze resting on me. When I lifted my eyes, he gave me a look that was full of questions.
"You're very quiet this evening,"
he said, leaning toward me and speaking quietly. I glanced quickly across the table and saw Cecily watching me. Her gaze slid to Philip, who was waiting for my response. I shrugged and looked away. From the corner of my eye, I saw Philip look from me to Cecily and back. "Sir Philip, I understand you have some very fine horses in your stables," Cecily said. "I hope you might have one suitable for me. I love to ride, and I would especially love to accompany you." Mr. Clumpet unexpectedly spoke up.
"That filly Miss Marianne has been riding is quite a beauty, Philip. Is she a new addition to your stables? I've seen you two out riding together nearly every morning."
I silently cursed Mr. Clumpet. Who knew he was interested in horses as well as the wild animals of India?
"Yes, she is a new addition," Philip said.
Cecily looked at me with surprise. "You're riding again?" For some reason, her question made me feel close to tears. Perhaps it was the sympathy that hid not far behind her surprise, or perhaps it was that she knew better than anyone else why it was such a momentous act for me to ride again. Whatever the reason, I felt choked with sudden emotion, and I had to blink away to ward off the unwanted tears. "Yes, I am." Cecily smiled across the table at me, and we understood one another as we always had. At that moment, there was no one between us, only understanding and a shared grief. Then she turned her sunny smile to Philip. "I am glad to hear you have a suitable horse, Sir Philip. I shall have to try her myself tomorrow morning. What time do we start?" I looked at my plate again and tried to contain my emotions. First, I felt ready to cry. Now, I felt ready to throw something at Cecily for wanting to take away my horse. This was not a good start to the evening.
"The decision is not mine to make," Philip said. "I promised Meg to Miss Marianne for the duration of her visit. You will have to ask her."
I was surprised and gratified by Philip's response, and cast him a grateful smile before I remembered I was not supposed to do such a thing. Cecily had first claim to my loyalty and affection, not Philip. Cecily looked at me.
I am sure my sister won't mind if you don't, Sir Philip.
I took a breath.
I don't mind, I said. But it was a lie.
I did mind very much. Was she going to take Meg from me too? Was it not enough to take Philip? I stopped myself at the thought. Cecily was not taking Philip from me. He was never mine. I sagged with relief when Lady Caroline finally stood, signaling the end of dinner. For once, I was grateful that the men always stayed behind in the dining room. I followed the other ladies into the hall. Cecily had her arm linked through Louisa's and was whispering something in her ear. Lady Caroline stood to the side, letting everyone else pass until I drew even with her. She rested her hand lightly on my shoulder and spoke quietly.
You seem a little out of sorts tonight. Is there anything amiss?
I have had a headache, that is all.
Why did you not tell me? I would have taken care of you.
Lady Caroline turned me toward the stairs.
Come with me. You should be in your bed.
In no time, she and Betsy had me changed into my nightgown, tucked me into bed, and sent for a cup of tea. Then Lady Caroline sat on my bed and bathed my forehead with lavender water. Her touch felt so motherly, and her eyes looked so kind and full of concern that I was overcome by a fierce longing for my own mother. I had told my heart to never cry over Philip, but I had given it no instructions about crying over my mother, my father, and the home and family I had lost. The tears spilled out so quickly I had no hope of calling them back. They ran down my temples into my hair. Lady Caroline handed me her handkerchief.
Do you want to talk about it?
I shook my head. No, I absolutely did not want to talk about it.
If you ever do, if you ever want to talk about anything, Marianne, I hope you will come to me.
A knock sounded at the door. My traitorous heart, released a little from its bondage, dared to leap with hope. But when Betsy opened the door, I saw that it was just a maid from the kitchen with the tea. After Lady Caroline and Betsy left, I chastised myself for loosening my hold on my heart at all. It did nonsensical things when it wasn't tightly controlled, like hoping to see Philip standing outside my door. I sipped at the tea, but I had no taste for it. When I set the cup down on the tray, I noticed for the first time the book lying there. It was the book of poetry I had started to read the day Philip had shown me the library. A piece of paper fell onto my lap when I opened the book.
I am very sorry you are feeling unwell. I thought you might like something to help you pass the time.
He had not signed it, but he hadn't needed to.
Tomorrow, I would be stronger, I told myself. Tomorrow, I would have better control over my heart. Tonight, I would indulge myself a little. I lay back against the pillows and turned to the first poem. My headache retreated, and my heartache ebbed while I read the poetry Philip had sent me. I fell asleep, with his note curled in my hand.
Chapter 17. Cecily came to my room early the next morning before breakfast. I sat at my writing desk, composing a letter to Grandmother. Betsy had not yet come up to help me with my hair, but I had to do something to stay busy so I would not think about Cecily and Philip and their morning ride together.
"I came to see how you're feeling today," Cecily said, sitting on my bed. "I'm sorry you were unwell last night. I would have come to see you myself, but I thought you would do better with some peace and quiet. And I know you don't like to be the center of attention, so I want to set your mind at ease. We did not talk about you at all last night. We played whist, and Sir Philip was my partner. And he was so droll. I vow, I was laughing all night."
I could easily believe that, considering how much she had laughed during dinner.
"I'm glad you enjoyed yourself," I said,
trying to make myself believe the words. I knew you would be happy for me. You always were an unselfish sister that way. She lay back on my bed with a yawn. That is why I didn't bother inviting you to ride with us this morning. Of course, it did little good, since Sir Philip invited his brother to come with us. Still, any time with him is better than none. Oh, you have already gone riding. I tried to smile. How did you like Meg? She frowned. She was a bit spirited for my taste, but I was able to keep her in check. I think you must have given her too much freedom, though. When she belongs to me, I will make sure she is properly trained. I clenched the quill I was holding so hard it snapped in two. I dropped the pieces on the desk and stood to look out the window. I would accept Philip's offer to trade my painting for Meg before I would let Cecily ruin that horse. She could find another horse, one that suited her better. "I have been wondering something," Cecily said in a casual voice. "Why did you not write to me that Sir Philip was here this whole time? If I had known, I would have come sooner." I turned from the window and looked at her in surprise. "What do you mean? You didn't know?" "I was told he went on a trip, and that we should stay in London and enjoy the masquerade ball since he would be away. But I wasn't informed that he had cancelled his trip until I heard it from the servants here." I had no answers to give her. I realized how foolish I had been to never question Philip's presence at the inn. Of course, he must have been on his way to somewhere. It was one more mystery to add to his collection of secrets. "I don't know anything about his trip," I said. "In fact, I must admit, Cecily, that I didn't even know it was Sir Philip whom you referred to in your letters." She gave me a quizzical look. "How could you not know?" I sat on the bed across from her, feeling nervous, and chose my words carefully. "It was the strangest thing, but I never heard him addressed by his title, and nobody told me that Sir Charles had died. I suppose everybody thought I knew. So I didn't know that Sir Philip's presence here would be significant at all to you." I did not like the speculative look she was giving me. "What?" I asked, feeling defensive. "I hope you will not have anything to regret," she said. I sat up straighter. "What do you mean? You and Sir Philip?" I willed myself not to blush. "Nothing happened between Sir Philip and myself." She laughed. "No, I did not suppose anything had happened. But you would not be the first lady to fall for his charms." She looked at me expectantly. "He is, of course, very charming. But I knew all along he was a flirt, and so I was never in danger of taking him seriously. He has been a friend to me, and that is all." I leaned forward and rested my hand on hers. "But Cecily, even if I had been in danger, you should know that I am loyal to you first and always." She smiled and squeezed my hand. "Of course I know that, but I would hate to see you broken-hearted when Sir Philip offers for me." I looked down at the blanket and picked at a loose thread. "You seem very optimistic. Has he said something?" "No, not yet. But I am certain it will not be long before he does. I know the signs of a man in love, and I have no doubt that Sir Philip is well on his way to falling in love with me, if he has not already." I bit the inside of my cheek as I struggled to keep my feelings in check. "Well then," I finally said, looking up with a weak smile, "I am sure it will be no time at all before you have won his heart and hand and everything else you want."
"Do you really think so?"
"Yes." It was the truth. Cecily had always gotten everything she wanted.
"Lady Cecily sounds so elegant, don't you think?"
She looked around the room with a sigh of pleasure.
"And I have really chosen well, have I not? I doubt I have ever met a better combination of good looks and great wealth. not to mention the estate. Of course, I will want to spend most of the year in London. I can't imagine staying in the country after knowing the entertainment to be had in town. She glanced at me quickly. And I am violently in love with him, you know. What could I possibly answer in return? I nodded and looked away from her happy face. My heart felt cold and heavy, and I wanted to sink onto my bed and stay there for at least a week.
You seem very dull, Cecily said, sitting up suddenly. I think you need to get out of the house. Sir Philip has said he has some business to attend to with his steward, and he will likely be busy all morning. So Louisa and I are going to walk to Lambton. You may come along. I am sure she won't mind your company, and you will love her, I know.
I hesitated, not sure if I wanted to spend the morning with Louisa, who had not been friendly at all to me last night.
If you're sure.
Yes, of course. She stood up and looked down at me. You will do something about your hair, though, yes?
I rolled my eyes.
No, I am going to walk to town looking like I just rolled out of bed. She laughed and ruffled my hair as if we were still children. I could not help but smile in return. When she left, I sat at the writing desk to finish my letter with a new quill. The letter was to the point. Dear Grandmother, here is what I have learned from Cecily so far. An elegant young lady should touch a man's arm and laugh at everything he says. I suppose this is called flirting. I find it loud and annoying. Sincerely, Marianne.
Oh, look how charming your bonnet is, Cecily said as I joined her and Louisa after breakfast. I carried my letter to my grandmother in my reticule, and I had allowed Betsy to fuss over my hair a little more than usual. I hoped to impress Louisa, or, at least, to not embarrass Cecily.
Isn't it nice, Louisa?
Louisa said nothing, but she didn't look like she was about to go into raptures over my bonnet.
Cecily linked one arm through Louisa's and the other through mine, and we set off in this manner for Lambton, which was but a few miles away. I looked past Cecily to ask Louisa, "Was this your first season as well?" She nodded. "How did you like it?"
"It was very diverting," Louisa said. She looked at Cecily. "Do you remember the ball at Almack's when Mr. Dalton?"
They burst out laughing.
And then Miss Hyde told him to...
More laughing. I looked on and wished I knew what was so funny.
What happened? Cecily waved a hand.
Oh, I don't think you would find it humorous. You would have to know the people involved.
I nodded. We walked on a few more steps, and then another laugh escaped from Cecily.
What was it that Lady Claremont said that night? Something about freckles?
Louisa giggled. Ruining a lady's chances more than a tarnished reputation.
And I quite agree. There is nothing so unattractive as a freckled face.
I bit my lip as I thought of my own freckles, which had grown in number since I had been spending so much time out of doors. Hopefully, Louisa would not notice them.
I don't know about that, Cecily said. I saw plenty of things more unattractive.
Remember Mr. Baines?
Louisa shuddered. How could I forget? They talked the entire way about the people they had met in London. It appeared my attempt to befriend Louisa had done no good at all. When we reached Lambton, we stopped first at the post office, where I mailed my letter to Grandmother.
You know, you can just ask Philip to frank that for you next time, Louisa said.
I knew that, but I liked having my own money to spend and something to spend it on. I liked not being dependent on someone for everything. It satisfied the demands of my pride a little. Cecily announced that she had to buy some new ribbon for a bonnet she was trimming, so we found the ribbon shop and started browsing. She picked three ribbons, all different shades of blue, and turned to me.
Which do you think?
She held them up to my face, opening her eyes wide.
Which most closely matches my eyes?
I looked at the three colors and secretly thought that it didn't make a difference which shade of blue she chose. But knowing that wasn't the answer she was looking for, I said, "That one, the darkest one." She looked at it, her brow wrinkled.
Really?
Because I did not think my eyes were quite this dark. But this other color has a touch of green in it, which I don't have in my eyes at all.
Louisa, what do you think?
Definitely not that one, she said, pointing to the one I had chosen.
Cecily put it down immediately. I tried not to care. It was just a ribbon, for heaven's sake. But there was a time when my opinion would have been the only one that mattered to Cecily. I turned my attention from them and stood in the doorway, looking out into the street. I was in this attitude of bored surveillance when I spied a familiar-looking figure across the street. He lifted his hat to me in recognition, and I reeled back in surprise. I imagined I could see the smirk on the nefarious nephew's face even at this distance. I thought of backing up and shutting the door, but it was too late. He had seen me and was crossing the street, languidly swinging his walking cane as he did.
"Good morning, cousin,"
Mr. Kellett said, bowing a little and looking very pleased with himself. I frowned at him.
"What are you doing here?"
He waved at the general surroundings.
"Visiting this charming town. What are you doing here?"
I gestured just as nonchalantly at the ribbon shop. Shopping for ribbon.
"Alone?"
he asked, with a glint in his eye that worried me. It worried me that he was here at all, actually. I could not believe he had chosen, by coincidence, to come to Lambden on a whim. Was it paranoid of me to suspect that I was the reason he was here? Had he followed me from Bath? "No, I am not alone," I said, nodding toward the inside of the shop. Mr. Kellett stepped toward me, and I was forced to either retreat into the shop or come in closer contact with him than I wanted to. I stepped inside, and he followed me, his eyes darting around the room. They rested on Cecily, who stood at the counter with her ribbons, her back to us. She turned just then with her purchase and walked toward us, Louisa trailing behind her. When her gaze landed on Mr. Kellett, Cecily's eyes widened and a self-satisfied smile turned up her lips before she pressed it down. Mr. Kellett bowed.
"Miss Daventry, Miss Wyndham."
Why could he not call me Miss Daventry? Cecily was just as much his cousin as I was.
"Mr. Kellett," Cecily said, sounding a little breathless. "What a welcome surprise."
She looked up at him through her lashes.
"What brings you to this area?"
He took her hand in his and raised it to his lips.
"I have been following my heart, and it has led me here to you."
I frowned on them. Cecily's gaze rested on Mr. Kellett's face as he kissed her hand. I recognized the look on her face, excitement and admiration, with just enough suggestiveness thrown in to bring a man to his knees. It was the very same look she had used on Philip the night before, when she had captured his attention all throughout dinner. I could not believe her. She had always acted foolish around Mr. Kellett, but this was beyond the pale. She should know better than to encourage a man of his reputation. I had not had a season in London, yet even I could judge by his haphazard mode of dress and the appraising look in his eyes as he swept his gaze over her figure that he was not a proper gentleman. Besides that, we had heard of his escapades for years. Why would Cecily want to flirt with him?
"Excuse me, Mr. Kellett, we were just leaving," I said, moving closer to Cecily.
He turned his languid gaze on me and smirked.
"Are you? Well, I hope I may call on you soon, cousin."
"No, you may not. And stop calling me cousin."
I knew I sounded rude, and I was glad of it. He only laughed. Cecily frowned at me, then turned with a bright smile to him.
"Mr. Kellett, you must excuse my sister's behavior. I hope you will come see us all very soon."
My face was hot with embarrassment as I followed her and Louisa out of the ribbon shop. As soon as we were out of earshot, she said, "Marianne, I can't believe how rude you were toward Mr. Kellett." My mouth fell open in shock. She was censuring me? I can't believe how encouraging you were. I took a deep breath, trying to calm down. You know what he is. He is a self-serving rake and the worst kind of scoundrel there is. She looked at Louisa, and they both burst into laughter. They were clearly not taking me seriously. Louisa smiled condescendingly. You are very naive, aren't you? I felt as if I had been slapped.
No, hush, Louisa, Cecily said. Don't be cruel. She has simply been sheltered. We must help her grow up.
She turned to me.
Listen, dear. Of course we're aware of Mr. Kellett's reputation. But there are some very good reasons to have a man like him around.
She leaned close and said quietly, The rakes are the best kissers. I stared.
How would you know?
She looked at Louisa, and they giggled. I would never have suspected Cecily of such behavior, but I saw the knowing smiles they cast at each other, and I was forced to accept the idea that maybe, just maybe, Cecily did know something about rakes and kissing. But I couldn't believe, after our conversation this morning, that she would really behave this way.
Cecily, do you really intend to flirt with Mr. Kellett when you have a different goal in mind? I asked. With a different gentleman?
She was clearly surprised. Louisa coughed in a way that sounded like she was trying to cover up a laugh.
Everyone knows it's perfectly acceptable for a lady to flirt, Cecily said. As long as she is discreet, and her husband will appreciate having the same freedom.
She leaned closer, putting her arm around my shoulder, and said quietly,
Please don't say anything like this when you have your season. I understand as your sister, but others will not be so kind to you, and I'm afraid you will be very embarrassed.
She moved away from me and gave Louise a look of long-suffering that made my face burn with shame. I said nothing more as we walked along, but my thoughts raced.
How could Cecily think about kissing a rake when she was supposed to be violently in love with Philip? And how would Philip feel if he knew this about Cecily?
Others might behave immorally, but Philip never would. I knew him. And I knew how deeply he wanted to be like his father, a gentleman in every sense of the word.
Never mind what behavior passed as elegant in London.
Philip was different. I was certain of that.
Chapter 18. At dinner that afternoon, Lady Caroline mentioned the ball that would be held at the Assembly Room that evening. Speaking of which, she said, we still have a lot to do to prepare for our own ball. It is only a week away, you know.
Thank heavens, I won't have to be a part of the planning, William said. I can't stand hearing talk of colours and flowers.
He looked at Philip.
You haven't changed your mind, have you?
I glanced at Philip. I hadn't spoken to him since the night before, and I found myself missing him much more than I had anticipated. Just now, letting my gaze rest on his familiar face, I felt a unique sense of relief.
No, of course not, Philip said. Good. I've been looking forward to this trip these past 6 months.
Trip? What trip? I looked in confusion from one to the other, but before I could ask anything, Lady Caroline said,
We won't need your help with the planning, but I do expect you both to be back in time for the ball.
William threw Rachel a pleading look, but she only smiled and said, Don't look at me like that. You know I want you at the ball. He groaned, and I had to smile a little at his pained expression.
We can't help with the ball plans today, Louisa said. I'm going to introduce Cecily to the Fairhursts. You won't mind if we take the gig, will you?
She looked at her mother, who turned worried eyes to me. The gig would not hold 3 passengers, which meant I was excluded from their plans.
You can take the carriage, Lady Caroline said, so that both of our guests will be able to join you.
She seemed to put extra weight on the word guests. Surely everyone at the table knew what Lady Caroline was doing. She was trying to force Louisa into taking me along, but I refused to be the object of charity, and I would not go along if I wasn't wanted.
Thank you for considering me, I said, but I would love to stay and help you plan the ball instead.
I have already met the Fairhursts. I felt Philip's gaze and knew my face was red with embarrassment, but I didn't glance his way. I pulled my pride tight around me like a cloak in winter and kept my pretense in place. Louisa might not want my company, but that didn't mean it had to hurt.
Cecily caught up with me in the hall as I left the dining room.
I'm so sorry, she said.
I stopped and looked at her. My smile felt forced.
I didn't feel like I could ask Louisa twice in one day to let you accompany us, but I would have invited you if I could have. I hope you understand.
Another forced smile.
Of course.
She hugged me, and the scent of lilacs enveloped me.
I knew you would.
She pulled away and threw me a smile before going upstairs to get her bonnet. I stood in the foyer, feeling lost and alone. Lady Caroline had to speak with the housekeeper, so she wasn't ready to talk with me about ball plans. Before today, I would have been making my way to the library to meet Philip for that chess game he kept promising me. But there was to be no more of that, now that Cecily was here. Still, I wandered toward the library because I had nothing better to do. I was sure Philip was doing something with William. Just as I expected, the room was empty. I sat on a chair in front of the window and looked out at the orchard. This was the same place where I had sat the day Philip told me all about his tour. Smoothing my hand over the leather armrest, I tried not to think of the days gone by that would never return. But it was no use. I missed Philip. I missed our afternoons together. I missed the days we had before Cecily had arrived and changed everything. And I missed Cecily, too, the sister I had known and loved all my life, who had always had time for me. I lay my head against the back of the chair, closed my eyes, and tried very hard to tuck my sadness away. It was threatening to escape its proper bounds and spill out of my heart. Even using all of my concentration, I was unable to find any real security of my emotions. They wavered close to the surface, and I kept feeling the urge to cry. I felt a stir in the air around me. Opening my eyes, I found Philip sitting on the windowsill directly in front of me, with his arms crossed, as if determined to wait there a long time if he had to. For some reason, I wasn't surprised to see him. We looked at each other in silence for a moment before the emotions I saw in his eyes became unbearable. There was sadness and gentleness and more pity than I wanted to see.
"Did you need something?" I asked.
"Yes," he said, reaching out and taking my hand. My heart thumped hard at his touch. I told myself I should pull my hand away, but I couldn't make myself do it.
"What did you need?"
My voice was little more than a whisper.
"Your smile.
I haven't seen it all day." I looked at my hand in his and wondered how to respond. I didn't think I could conjure up one more false smile to save my life, so I just sighed and didn't say anything.
"Why don't you join William and me?
I'm going to show him the work I've had done on the estate since his last visit."
I met his gaze. "I don't want your pity."
His grip on my hand tightened, and his voice sounded exasperated.
"I am not offering you pity, Marianne. I want you to come with us."
He looked sincere, and I wanted to believe that he wanted my company, but I didn't want to know for sure, because I didn't think I could bear it if I found out that he didn't mean it, that he was only being polite. Besides that, I had still chosen Cecily. I had committed my loyalty to her. I knew it was still the right decision, even if it made me unhappy.
"Thank you for the invitation," I said, slipping my hand out of his. "But I can't accept it."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"Can't or won't?"
His question reminded me of my question to him the first night I was here. Smiling a little, I answered, "Both."